Good morning. Good to have you folks with us on today's edition of the Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program, along with my co-host Marty Martin and Julie Goodnight, one of the outstanding clinicians in the United States at this point in time, who's also going to be at the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo, March 9th through the 11th, I believe it is. Julie, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Howard. Thanks for having me.
And Marty, how's the world treating you? You got all your snow shoveled?
Yeah, I do. I've kept my wife out there working really hard, so she's got it all taken care of.
Okay, Julie, let's talk a little bit about you and your background to start off with. As far as your riding background is concerned, it's kind of varied, isn't it?
Yeah, I've done a lot of different stuff. My father is a tried and true quarter horse man. He doesn't have horses anymore, but and Western and doing a lot of packing and trail riding. He lived in Jackson Hole for about 20 years, so did a lot of that kind of stuff with him. But I got interested in riding English. I actually grew up in Florida and big hunter jumper circuit there. That's what I wanted to do, and my dad let me pursue that. So the lessons and formal training I had as a child were English and dressage and jumping. And then through college, I rode racehorses, so that brought a whole different take on thing on the horse business to my experience. And then I've had various pursuits. When I moved out west, I didn't really want to ride English anymore. And so that's when I got into the Western Performance Horse, and that's where my personal interests lie now, and like to do the cow horse stuff. So I've kind of done a lot of different things.
Marty, when a person has varied experiences, and one thing, if you or I were riding racehorses, ever had any racehorse experience, they'd have to be racing Percherons or Clydesdales, wouldn't they?
I'd probably want to be on the one that was at the very end.
And what would you like to ask Julie, Marty?
Being self-employed and having it be in the horse business, the horse industry, you have made a marvelous pitch for yourself. And I have been watching you on RFD TV recently, watching you start colt. You don't try to rush things. You just take it nice and slow and easy. And in a way, I don't know if this comes off when I say it comes off right or not, but you kind of take what the horse will give you. You read the horse really well, I think.
Well, thank you. I mean, you can only take what the horse will give you. He can't give you any more than what he's capable of that moment. I think you have to do that. And I guess I see it again and again. And I know you do too. People that are asking more of a horse than he's capable of and how difficult that is for the horse. And we always blame the horse for his incapabilities. And, you know, sometimes...
He
doesn't really have much control over that. So it's a good way of putting it, I think.
Let me ask a question real quick. You consider what you do, would you term it as, we have to put labels on everything. Would you call it natural horsemanship?
I think that's the label people know and understand. I always try to define that whenever I'm doing presentations or clinics. And the way I define it is simply knowing and understanding the horse's natural behavior and then using that information to interact with him in a way that's understandable to him. But to me, what's key in natural horsemanship is the first part of that statement, understanding the horse's natural behavior. And that takes a lot of time and work and experience. I know Marty would agree with that. I've not only, worked hard to understand it through my personal experience, but I've studied it. I've read everything I can. I've gone to as many clinics as I can, like Marty's clinics and any clinics I can lay my hands on to try to learn more and understand. So it's a long journey.
Still learning?
Am I still learning?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Every day. You know, and that's the great thing about, I think, this sport in particular is that the older you get, the better you get. And because the more understanding you have. And, I learned a long time ago, Marty, that if I don't keep learning, I grow stagnant and stale and start getting very burned out. My teaching gets stale. So I have to keep learning to just keep my own personal interest level up and to also keep my professional capability where it should be.
Do you learn a lot from each horse that you work with, Julie?
Oh, absolutely. That's why you learn every day. And one of the cool things about my job is I interact with a lot of different horses. There are periods of the year where I ride my horse fewer than anyone else. I mean, I ride a lot of horses every day, but not my own. And so you learn not only from the new horses you encounter, but my horse usually manages to teach me something every day too.
And what about the people that you work with? Do you pick up some interesting information from those folks?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the people are, the challenges in teaching people and making them understand, it's horses are much easier to work with. And, you know, the challenge of what we try to do with the TV show is I didn't want to do a TV show where I waltz on the scene and fix the problem with the horse. I want
because
the owner to be able to do that. Yeah. And the big challenge is, can we get the owner to understand how to do this? And can we get the owner to change their ways enough that the horse responds? So, yeah.
But Julie, that's really a good way to look at it, and gosh, this is also a good time to take a break, so let's do that and get this program paid for, but you folks stay tuned. We'll have more with Julie Goodnight in just a moment. You're listening to the Horseman's Corner.
Your Washingtons and Lincolns will go further all week long at Brighton Feed and Saddlery. This is Roger reminding you that starting President's Day, February 20th through Saturday the 25th, all our friends and customers will receive $10 off each purchase of $50. Included are headstalls, bits, reins, spurs, Western home decor, halters and leads, knives, grooming supplies, tack. Well, you get the idea. We do have to exclude feed, farrier supplies, and saddles. But speaking of saddles, we have some great deals in that department. New Circle Y Cypress Trail, regularly $14.98, now $9.99. How about a new Quartz Wade style, regularly $23.95 for President's Week, only $18.95. And there's lots more bargains in the saddle department that good. Brighton Feed and Saddlery really is the finest full-service saddle shop, feed store, and farrier supplier in the Rocky Mountain West. Check our ever-expanding website at brightonsaddlery.com or call from anywhere to 800-237.
Welcome back to the Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program, along with me co-host Marty Barton and guest Julie Goodnight. We're on the second part of today's program. And Julie, when you're working one of your clinics, talk about some of the challenges that you have there, will you?
When I work with horses and riders, it's generally on a one-time basis, just for the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. There's 14 other horses and riders, and excuse me, I have to get an understanding of the horse and an understanding of the person, and then try to affect some sort of change. But I'm only going to be around for a very short period of time. I need them to leave with, they're going to go home and do all the work on the horse. That's going to be a lot of investment in time, so I need them to leave with the understanding of how to do that. And that's the challenging part, is the teaching, no doubt about it.
What about the places you go, like the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo. Your time is limited there. What do you try to accomplish at these horse fairs and expos?
Well, expos are much different from clinics because when I'm doing a presentation to the audience, any horses and riders that happen to be in the arena are tools for me to do my presentation to the audience. So it takes a big shift into who you're teaching. And I always tell when I have riders with me at expos, you know, I always tell them before the presentation that their job is to help me teach the audience. And here's how I would like you to do that. And, and then I have a very set window of time and a very specific topic to cover. And I've learned through experience that, well, first of all, if you don't manage your time right, then you just aren't giving a good presentation. And secondly, if you go off topic, people generally are not very happy with you because they came to the presentation based on the topic in the program. So it's different. It's a different kind of challenge. I really enjoy it.
What are you specifically going to do at the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo, Julie?
Well, I'm doing sort of a blend of kind of my old standbys, most popular stuff, primarily in helping people improve their riding. So I think I've got a couple of presentations on what I call the natural ride, just understanding how to balance on a horse, how to move rhythmically with the horse, how to cue the horse. So that, with light aids. And, so that's kind of the old standby stuff. That's what people tend to, like the most, at least in the comments they make to me is, and everybody, we all have to work on our riding. You know, it doesn't matter what level you're at. Everybody works on their riding. And because we can't be a perfect rider, all we can do is try to get better.
Yes,
and hopefully I'll have a few riders in the arena with me at different levels, different disciplines, and we'll just be working on improving rider skill there. And then I'm doing a new presentation that I'm really excited and I've been working on in how to ride your horse bridleless. And
that'll be good.
I'm excited about it. I have fun with that, and I've what's unique about the Rocky Mountain Expo for me is that since I don't have to get on a plane, I can actually bring my own horse, and so I'll have my horses there, and we're gonna have some other riders ride bridleless, and so going to do a presentation on just kind of what the steps are to get to that and how you can start working on it. So that'll be fun. The other presentations I'm doing have also to do with favorite topics of people is on improving the canter. So we'll kind of just go through kind of A to Z sort of thing on cueing and riding the canter and leads and lead problems and lead changes and all that. So,
Julie, what about the fear factor? There are a lot of people anymore that are getting back into riding who maybe have been out for 20 years, or maybe they always wanted a horse and couldn't afford it. Now they can. How big a factor is fear?
Well, it's huge in all facets of horse sports. It doesn't have to be people new getting into horses. Certainly anyone that's ever worked with horses for lifetimes, like Marty and I have been in wrecks and been banged up, beat up, if not worse. So everybody from the beginning amateur level to the highest professional level, at some time or another, deals with fear. And also keep in mind that horses are extremely fearful animals themselves. So it's kind of a interesting combination that way. And I always tell people, you know, I think it's a perfectly fine sign of intelligence if you have some healthy fear towards horses, because they are big, scary animals capable of spontaneous violent combustion at any moment. So, you know, the first thing is to understand that everybody deals with fear at some time or another. It's okay to have that fear. It's not okay when the fear starts controlling you and your actions and what you do. And so I've written a lot about this. There's a lot of free information on my website about it. But knowing and understanding the basis of your fear and understanding it's a normal, natural reaction. And then once you do that, you can start working on controlling the emotion. And that's perfectly, I won't say it's easy to do, but it's perfectly doable if you work at it. I would encourage people to go to my website, juliegoodnight.com, click on the training library. It's juliegoodnight.com.
Okay.
And then at the top menu, that you click on the training library. And there's several hundred articles there, all categorized, and many of them have to do, in fact, I think there's a whole section, a whole category on fear there. So,
Julie, you need to get to the point where you can control your emotions. Sometimes overreaction or a violent really getting after the horse sometimes is a fear factor, maybe on our part. But they read us so well, we really have to control those emotions, do we not?
Absolutely. And so it's because of the horse is such a fear-based animal that complicates the emotion of fear. And part of it is controlling your body language and your reactions so that the horse feels calm and reassured in your presence. But the funny thing is that as soon as you start controlling your body language, you are now controlling the emotion, because it's the mind-body-spirit connection, or the mental, the physical, and the emotional. So those three parts of our being are intertwined. And what happens in fear meltdowns is that the emotion starts overriding the mental and the physical. The physical is your body language. So if you can do that one thing and control your body language and look confident and take a confident posture, your horse responds to that positively, because he wants somebody that's very confident to be in charge. And but you also sort of fake your own self into feeling confident, because your physical being is now overriding the emotionality. And that's what you have to do. You have to engage your mind, and you have to control your body language. As soon as you engage your mind and start thinking about what's going on in your environment, looking at your horse, reading the signs, looking at his posture, as soon as you engage your mind, the mental also starts overriding the emotional. So when you're having an emotional meltdown, it's because the emotion is overriding the mental and the physical parts of your being. Well, thing about it is, with horses, they respond. I mean, it's a negative thing about horses too. They respond both ways. If you have a lot of fear in your posture and your reactions, they are generally going to react negatively to that. But when you have the right kind of posture that they recognize as calm and confident, then they, you know, get happy about that.
Well, Marty, I don't know about you, but when it got to the point where you got to engage your mind, that's probably the thing that I have the most trouble with. What about you?
Yeah, it seems like it's uniform among us.
Well, I guess we better take a break before we get any sillier, but let's do that, and you folks stay with us. We'll have a lot more with Julie Goodnight in just a moment. You're welcome back to the Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program, along with me co-host Marty Martin and our guest Julie Goodnight. Let's continue our conversation with Julie Goodnight. Hey, Julie, let's talk about some of the tools, training tools that you have available and that I know you've worked on for a lot of years. Can people pick up quite a bit from the books and videos and articles that you have available?
You bet. Like I said, there's lots of free information on my website. And then most of I have several series of videos, training videos, that where I try to break things down step by step. And my newest one that's just about to come out is Colt Starting. And Marty, I'll send you one as soon as I get them. I hope you'll like it.
Oh, but, I know I will.
We did double duty on the TV show. We stepped out of our normal routine just a little bit and to do this Colt Starting, and we made 4 episodes out of it. But also at the same time, we filmed a full length training video. So I have a video series on riding skills, improving rider skills. And then I have a whole video series on training the horse from the ground up. And so those are real popular tools because people like the visual aspect, and most people are visual learners, and so if they can, you know, picture it as you're talking about, things go better generally. So people tend to like the videos. Also, we've got equipment, rope halters, leads, bidding equipment, other kinds of equipment, and as you can see, I'm not a great self-promoter or salesperson, but there's lots of tools. You know, I've tried to, particularly on the videos, develop the videos as a tool for people to learn how to get better, and what people comment the most about my teaching is that I just break it down into really simple components that are easy to understand. So that's what I've got. And of course you can, all of that's on my website. If you go to juliegoodnight.com and click on the shopping link, you can see the full catalog.
But when it comes down, what did you have in it? It's very important, is it not, for people to be able to ride reasonably well, to communicate with that horse? Is that the reason you made these riding videos?
Well, you know, in general, horses try really hard to do our bidding. And in general, riders give conflicting signals to horses and confuse horses. I know Marty agrees with me because he's done probably a lot more clinics than I have, but, you know, it's what we were alluding to earlier. People are so quick to blame the horse, but the truth is the horse can only perform to the level of the rider, and at best, the high-level rider stays out of the way of the horse. So, absolutely, I believe it is incumbent upon the rider to try to get better every single day that they ride and to work at it, because even though sometimes it doesn't seem like it, your horse is trying to do his job, and he's trying really hard, and most of the time we're getting in the way.
What do you see as some of the biggest problems that people have when they're working in the horse? What kind of holds them back? What are some of the things that they really do to confuse that horse?
Well, to me, the overwhelming thing is the rider's hands. And people are tend to be relentlessly putting pressure on the bit a lot of times when they shouldn't be. And the classic case is when you have the forward moving energetic horse and somebody's pulling back on his mouth all the time.
Yeah.
What they don't understand is they're causing the horse to go fast by doing that. And so I think that most of the biggest problems trace back to inappropriate bits in the horse's mouth, bits that are inappropriate to the level of the rider, or bits that just aren't great for the horse. But it mostly boils down to what the rider's doing with the bit, because even with a less than ideal bit in the horse's mouth, it's the rider's hands that exacerbate the problem.
Amen is would be my comment to that, wouldn't you, Marty?
Oh, yeah, I think that's very true. I think what Julie just said is I've seen it time after time, and I totally agree.
Hey, Julie, do we tend to sometimes nag at our horses?
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I don't know. There's a lot about horses that is very counterintuitive, but the truth is they're very sensitive animals, and, you know, it's so classic with novice riders for the rider to be kicking the horse to go forward at the same time they're pulling back on the reins. In fact, every time they kick, they pull back on the reins harder. And, you know, how much of that is what we're supposed to take? And what it boils down to is what his temperament is. If he's a very well-tempered horse, he'll just tune it out and ignore it and, you know, probably just stand still because that's the easiest thing to do. But if it's a hotter-blooded horse or a horse with a less than pleasant temperament, that kind of horse reacts. And then he says, I'm not going to take that anymore. Take this. And he bucks or rears or refuses. And so then he becomes a bad horse. It's an endless puzzle, but it's a good job security. Right, Marty?
That's very true.
Okay.
So, Julie, I am now retired, so to speak. I don't give clinics like I used to. My wife and I are giving what we call trail obstacle clinics.
Yeah,
and,
I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yeah. I hear from Jody a lot.
Pardon me?
I said, yeah, I heard it. Jody sent me the information on it.
Oh, my golly.
Well, see, you're talking to the good half of that partnership then, Julie.
Yeah, I know.
Howard knows.
Hey, we fouled this up. Why don't you get off the line and put Jody on, would you?
Oh, I should. I think she's tied up right now, Howard.
Hey, let me give you guys an example of something that I saw the other day and get some response to it from either or both of you. But a lady brought a horse down to our horse barn and she was working it on the ground. And the guy that trains down here, who's very good, said, let me see what you're doing. Because the horse was, when he was going in the circle, was kicking. As she was working that horse, thought she was doing everything she should be to work that horse in the round pen. She never quit moving that doggone stick. The horse was moving. She'd ask him to move, and it was still thump, thump, thump on the ground. And so even when we're leading the horse or working in the round pen, not just on his back, we can be a nag, can we not?
Marty, you want to take that one?
Well, no, but, Julie, I think you're more qualified, but I would agree we can nag the horse even when we think we're not nagging him.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, if I said it once, I said it a million times. Anybody who's ever taken a clinic with me has heard me say this, but I would rather see someone give one harsh reprimand to a horse and be done with it than to nag, and develop an adversarial relationship with the horse. And Howard, I know exactly what you're talking about. In fact, I just wrote about this in my blog a few days ago, and it's titled Adversarial Relationships with Horses. But I see it again and again and again everywhere I go. And I tell you where I see it a lot is people doing groundwork with horses that have clearly already done a lot of groundwork with horses, with that horse. And the horse is doing all the stuff they asked, but in a reactionary way, with its ears put back, with a little kicking and sassiness, maybe a little gesture here and there from the horse that means, you know, up yours. And a lot of times it does involve a stick.
Well, we're running over time, so we're going to have to take a break. But you folks stay tuned. We'll be back with Julie Goodnight in just a moment. You're listening to the Horseman's Corner.
Your Washingtons and Lincolns will go further all week long at Brighton Feed and Saddlery. This is Roger reminding you that starting President's Day, February 20th through Saturday the 25th, all our friends and customers will receive $10 off each purchase of $50. Included are headstalls, bits, reins, spurs, Western home decor, halters and leads, knives, grooming supplies, tack. Well, you get the idea. We do have to exclude feed, farrier supplies, and saddles. But speaking of saddles, we have some great deals in that department. New Circle Y Cypress Trail, regularly $14.98, now $9.99. How about a new Quartz Wade style, regularly $23.95 for President's Week, only $18.95. And there's lots more bargains in the saddle department that good. Brighton Feed and Saddlery really is the finest full-service saddle shop, feed store, and farrier supplier in the Rocky Mountain West. Check our ever-expanding website at brightonsaddlery.com or call from anywhere to 800-237.
Welcome back to the Horseman's Corner. We're on part four of today's program. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program, along with me co-host Marty Martin and guest Julie Goodnight. Talk more about how that stick that you were talking about in the last segment can be overused, Julie.
The stick is a great training tool, but if the horse comes to view it as a clobber stick, he might start thinking that's unfair. And what I see a lot and what I wrote about on my blog is people, the horse learns, the horse is an extremely fast learner, and for better or for worse. What happens a lot of times, first of all, you talk about nagging, Howard, I think a horse puts out an effort and says, okay, sure, I'll do this circling and turning exercise again today for the 1,000th and 268th time, and then he puts a little effort into it, and the person just does it again and again and again and asks for more, and the horse knows what you're asking. He's doing it, he's going through all the right gestures, but you don't give him a break and you praise him because you're doing the groundwork. That's when horses start developing resentment, I believe. Do you know what I'm talking about, Marty?
Yes, I do, and I think you're totally right. And I have seen that on a horse that was so good-natured. And then all of a sudden, the next time I see him, he's like you say, he's all of a sudden he's bad-tempered.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see that person work with the horse, and I say, oh, now I know how that horse got that way.
If you...
Just like what you described.
The truth is the horse learns faster than the person does. So the person's out there learning the groundwork, and the horse, he gets it. And then the rider or the handler doesn't understand the horse gets it, so he keeps up with high-pressure cues that are reactionary cues that are, you know, a jerking. And instead of just asking the horse, okay, would you please stop now? Thank you. Would you please turn around and go the other way? The person's still waving the stick and jerking and flailing. This horse is going, all right, already. I know what you're asking me to do. Just let me do it. And that's when you start seeing these bad attitudes in horses, and I don't blame them. So a lot of times what I do in clinics when I see that, almost every clinic I do, I see it. I try to just get the person to totally tone down what they're doing. Drop the stick. Just use your hands to gesture. he knows what you're asking him to do. You've made about 1,000 circles with him already. So, you know, and then give horses more breaks, more praise and more breaks. You know, there are some bad natured horses out there. Don't get me wrong. But most horses are not. Most horses have very willing and generous attitudes, but they're a product of their training and handling.
I think you hit the nail on the head in my lifetime, and it's, I'm middle-aged if I live to be 152. I've only seen one horse in that, and I've been around a lot of horses. I've only seen one that I thought really had a nasty, bad attitude inherently.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I'm sure I haven't known more than maybe two or three in my lifetime. The overwhelming majority of horses are willing and kind and generous animals.
Yeah, they're a neat animal.
Having said that, there are good tempered horses, there are great tempered horses, and there are less than ideal tempered horses. Just like the same could be said for people, right?
That's very true.
You do have to sort of work within the horse's temperament.
How have you advised people who have, let's say, are not that skilled themselves, and then they have how you would classify as a less than perfect tempered horse? How do you advise them?
Well, a lot of times the advice, and this isn't easy, but the older I get, the easier it gets. A lot of times the advice is, this is not an appropriate horse for you.
There you go.
And
I've done the same thing, Julie.
I didn't do it when I was younger because I didn't want to lose a client over it. And when I finally got up the nerve to say that to a client, a training client, sure enough, lost the client. But since then, it's gotten increasingly, it's never an easy thing to say to someone because it's not really what they want to hear. You know, we were talking about the fear issue earlier. You know, one thing I say to people when they've ended up with a very challenging horse and they're struggling with a fear issue, maybe they got hurt on this horse, maybe they're just scared to get hurt, that life's too short to be doing this to yourself every day. And if you knew the joy of having a well-trained, well-tempered horse that was fun and safe to ride, you wouldn't be, at least, you know, I'm at the age, we're all over 50 here, the three of us. Life's too short for me to be doing that to myself every day. And I'm a professional rider, but I don't have time for a project horse. I don't get to ride my horse as much as I'd like to. And I don't want to have a project. Many times my advice to people is you need to either send this horse to a trainer and sink a bunch of money into him and get training yourself in the meantime, or you need to consider moving on and getting a different horse.
I think that's excellent advice, Julie. I really do. It's tough for them to hear it, and I agree with you. It's tough for the professional to deliver it.
Julie, your point is excellent, because a lot of times it's cheaper not to sink a lot of money in a and then you have to have a trainer that is capable of making that a good, safe horse.
Well, what I say all the time to people is that you can always buy training cheaper than you can put it on a horse, because training occurs over such a long period of time, and to train a horse to a high level takes a lot of time and money. And you can always go out and buy a well-trained horse cheaper than you could start from scratch and train that horse. But, you know, I don't want to be totally doomsday, because I would like to think anyway that in clinics what I do mostly is help people iron out these problems. You know, sometimes it's as simple as tack changes. You know, get a different bit. Get a, you know, the saddle's a problem. The way you're saddling the horse is a problem. Where you're putting the saddle or whatever. You know, so I think a lot of the most problems are solvable, but there are definitely people that are in over their heads with horses, and it's not safe, and it's certainly not pleasant for either the horse or the person. And you know, talking about this reminds me of this story that happened to me at an expo a number of years ago. And it was a big expo back east, and very crowded, busy day, people waiting in line a long time to talk to me and ask questions. And this young man, not that young, he's probably in his late 20s, something like that, early 30s, he waited in line a long time, and he came up to me, and honest to God, this is the question he asked me almost verbatim. He said, Miss Goodnight, I wonder if you could give me some advice. I'm a beginner rider, and I'm starting a colt under saddle. And I was dumbfounded at that point. I didn't know really where to start. It amazes me that people think they could train an animal to do something that they did not themselves know how to do. How does that work exactly?
Yeah, how does that work? Explain that to me. How does that work?
We're in this day and age where so many unwanted horses are out there, and people are doing the noble thing and trying to adopt horses and... but a lot of those horses come with baggage, and it's a scary thing that people end up with horses that really need a professional or an expert in their to be handled, and they're big, scary, dangerous animals. So one thing my father impressed upon me from day one is, you can get killed doing this. And you cannot be too safe. And in spite of that, wrecks will happen.
I'm sure he's one of the reasons, Julie, that you have risen to the level that you have.
Well, I think so. I certainly appreciate that more than anything. I learned from a myriad of people in my life, but I had an upbringing that was around horses that was very no fuss, no muss. This is the way you got to do it. I was fortunate that way.
We've talked about your father, but other than your father, who have been your mentors?
Most of my mentors are not people that names that would mean anything to anyone.
Uh-huh.
But Dr. Jim Hurd has been a mentor to me, and he, was at CSU.
Yeah, he's a good man.
And is now, unfortunately, we lost him to Texas A&M.
Right.
But the behaviorists, I think, and Dr. Hurd, I would say the behaviorists, those are the people that have influenced me the most, the people I've heard and read. Dr. Miller, I really have learned a lot from his books, and I've had the pleasure of meeting him. Again, I would say he's a behaviorist. Daniel Mills is a behaviorist in England who I have studied a lot, read a lot. There's a great book called Equine Behavior. George Waring was sort of wrote the Bible on horse behavior, that book's called Horse Behavior. George Waring, it's out of print, has been out of print for a long time, but you can still get copies of it. I've been influenced by many, many trainers, and yourself included, Marty.
Julie Goodnight, an outstanding horsewoman and clinician. You can see her work over at the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo 9th through the 11th of March, and maybe get an opportunity to visit with her a little bit and get some of your questions and answers about horses. It is time to close out today's show. And so for myself, Howard Hale, and co-host Marty Martin, I'll say thanks for joining us for the Horseman's Corner. May God bless. You come back and join us again next week, same time, same place.